Hello and welcome to Artists Soar. This is a podcast for artists by three artists. We discuss all aspects of being artists, the good, the bad, and the ugly. The goal of each podcast is to provide solutions so artists can focus on their creativity and soar above. I'm Rachel Harshenko.
Jules McCullough.
Stephanie Weaver.
Hi, and welcome to this episode. We have a special guest with us today, Susan Hensel. She is amazing. We've decided we're going to be BFFs from here on out. I'm going to give you a little background. She received her bachelor's of fine art from University of Michigan in 1972 with a double major in painting and sculpture and a concentration in ceramics. She has, as of today, probably more than 300 exhibitions, 35 of them being solo, 20 have garnered awards. And in the upcoming 2 years, Susan has solo and two-person and group exhibitions scheduled in Ellicott, Maryland. Is that where that is?
That one just finished. Yeah.
Awesome. Bloomington, Hopkins, Minnesota, Duluth, and the Garrett Museum of Art in Indiana.
Yeah.
Hensel's artwork is known and widely collected. She represents a ton of collecting libraries, museums, and one, the Modern Museum of Art in New York, the Getty Research Institute with major holdings at Minnesota Center for Book Arts.
Wow.
University of Washington, Baylor University, University of Colorado at Boulder. She goes on and on and on and on. In recent years, Hensel has been awarded many grants and residencies through the Jerome Foundation, the Minnesota State Art Board, Art to Change the World, Virginia Center for Creative Arts, and Ragdale Foundation.
I love Ragdale.
Her curated work began in 2000 in East Lansing, Michigan, with the art department, and that has only deepened as she has ownership of the Susan Hensel Gallery in Minneapolis. God, I can't even say it anymore.
Minneapolis.
Oh, my Lord.
This is why we have her do it.
I know. She has her own gallery. Her gallery is also on artsy.net as an online project promoting Midwest artists with the particulars and interest in materials and handmade items. She has curated over 100 exhibitions, and she supports events and emerging artists from all over the United States and Canada. I don't know what she is doing on our show. She has way too many awards, way too thought of. She's an amazing person. We've already spoken to her a couple of times, and I just want to welcome you, Susan, to our little bitty show. We appreciate you so much.
Oh, well, thank you, Rachel and Stephanie and Jules. I appreciate it. And you're never too big for your britches, you know?
Well, we're excited because we're going to be talking about how to stay productive when things aren't going great. And this kind of came about when we were talking earlier about COVID and how galleries weren't having gallery events anymore, anything like that. Like, how do you stay productive when your artwork is not getting out there? And so you have some great ideas on this. Plus, bless your heart, you're doing it right now.
I am. It's been a rough few years. You know, first we had COVID, which shut down 100% of my exhibitions. I had a full year of exhibitions scheduled you know, all over the United States, and some of the exhibitions I was really excited about. And it was like, okay, now what? You know, some were utterly canceled. There was one in Florida that I was really excited about and had hoped to go to. And that got delayed like three times. It finally happened about 2 years into COVID. I didn't get sick, you know, yay, I didn't get sick. But I definitely had the response initially of, you know, catastrophe, you know, what am I going to do now?
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah. And I realized pretty quickly, and I tend to work this way. I mean, you have to suck your thumb a little bit in the corner. I mean, that's normal. Drink a half a bottle of wine and some bonbons. And then you have to say, okay, fine. What are my options? And the option I came up with was creating my own online shows. And so initially I was doing that just through my website so that I could help get people to different parts of my inventory, because I've got a lot of work. I've been working a long time. And so I've got a lot of work, and there are ways to group it that help people access it. And so I started that way. But meanwhile, I decided I would contact Artsy. Artsy.net is kind of the original and the big boy of online platforms for galleries. And I've been going to it for years. It's a great place to look at art. It's a great place to do research. You know, if you're a still life artist, you just type in still life and you go looking at the artwork for inspiration. But you can also look at the artwork and go, huh, what country are they from? Who's showing them? Huh. You know, you can do some deep research. And they also have really good articles in general. So I've been reading them for probably 3-4 years. And I just said, well, I can't imagine that I could afford them, but I'll write to them. And it turns out they had an affordable option for the small galleries like me. And I decided that it was time to return to representing people. I had shut down most of the gallery program in my building sometime before the pandemic hit, because I really needed to return to my studio practice and I wasn't balancing both real well. And so it was time. And then when COVID hit, it was time to enter studio gallery practice again and to do it online, which is a little bit more manageable. And so I started up with Artsy, and I represent, I think it's 5 people right now from Minnesota, Michigan. I might have a Wisconsinite. So I try to keep it kind of in the Great Lakes area, because how else are we going to be seen? You know, these are people whose work belongs in commercial galleries. And it's hard to get work in commercial galleries from this location. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I started doing it. And it's also just, I have skills, you know, I have learned things over the years, and it felt time to give back again and to mentor those who are open to it. And I have a couple of people that I mentor anyways, and that's a lot of fun. But that's been delayed by things like hurting my hip a year ago, and then on Valentine's Day this year, falling and breaking the femur on that same side. So we get to start over again. So one of the questions at hand then is, how do you keep going?
Right. So how do you do that when?
When everything seems to be conspiring against you.
Right.
It may well be your family going, oh, why don't you clean up that stuff? You know, and You know, I.
Oh, yes.
You heard that, huh?
Yes. Well, you know, I haven't had to experience that, but because I've had a very supportive family. And at this juncture, you know, I've been living alone for, I don't know, 38 years. I was widowed that long ago. And we built our house with a studio for me. You know, he knew that was important.
I love that. That's awesome.
Yeah. And it wasn't just a back bedroom. I was working in clay then. So we had to think about all kinds of things. And we just took a standard suburban house plan because it was a subdivision that was being built. And we just made the family room bigger. We put a door on it. And the laundry room became the kiln room. I mean, it all worked out.
Great idea.
Yeah. No, he got it. And I've never had to fight that battle, but I think it's really, really, really important. And it's probably more so for women than men because we tend to stay home with the little kiddles and at various times. And you just have to draw a line in the sand that says, that back bedroom's mine, or that corner of the kitchen is mine. You take yourself seriously enough to claim your space.
Yes, that's a great point.
It's huge. And your space might be tiny. I mean, one of the places I learned it about this whole mindset was from a really magnificent artist. I have no idea if she's still alive. Alison McMaw. She was a world-class colorist, and I took a workshop or two from her. And she was a victim of anti-nepotism. So her husband got the job at Michigan State University, but she did not. And so Michigan State University really missed out by not having her. And I went to her house for a workshop, and she said, well, you know, I couldn't do this when my kids were little, but I could sit at the kitchen table and I could do collage.
Mm-hmm.
I could do things that were safe. I couldn't do oil paints when they were little, but I could do this. And I always worked. I always worked. And I went, bing. Yes, always.
But that's a big mindset, Susan, that some women don't.
Yeah, it's a hard one. I'm a 1950s chick, so of course I have even more of that. I mean, my mother was a teacher, but she wasn't allowed to teach as a married woman until I was about 9.
Wow.
Because married women weren't allowed to teach. And when she went back to
chills.
It's hard to imagine, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is. I mean, one of the things that really, when we first started talking, that drew me to you was the how much you have seen and dealt with. And I'm sitting here trying to be quiet and just absorb all the information that you have. It's like you have lived it.
Yeah, I have.
So you've had life butt up against you in so many ways that we can't even fathom. So
I have college professors who said, there, you're just gonna go home, make no art, and be a mother. I mean, literally. And I had and he was one of my main professors. He at least would meet with me and actually do reasonable critiques. But my other sculpture professor wouldn't even teach me. He would walk away in the middle of a question because women were beneath his use, because we were useless and we were not trained on the table saws. Women were not allowed to use most of the shop tool.
Yeah, I'm like Stephanie here. Susan, I'm like amazed, and it makes me want to like cry. Just
it really
not
does.
Only you, but all these other women who have truly missed out.
Yeah. And a lot of them did go home. Of course they did. You know, and they were so beaten down by all of this. And it was cultural. It wasn't just, you know, at the university, that they were not able to come out and become what they were probably called to do, which doesn't mean that they weren't wonderful mothers, wives, whatever. You know, of course they were. But there's that other part of us that's so important, and it makes us better at everything else. You know, and so
that first mindset of continue to do your work, even if it's in small bits. And you kind of touched on it, and I feel like we have touched on it before, and as being women, but being mentors.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that I see in you that I love, is that not only do you represent other artists, men and women, but women, and then you also mentor.
Yeah.
So does that help you stay productive as well?
Yeah, it does. It keeps me engaged intellectually with what other people are struggling with, and to help them problem solve, because it's very much an interactive. It's not a program that I have developed. It's very individual. And for one of the artists, and I actually represent her, it's a matter of helping her to see her bodies of work. She's pretty clear about her goals. She just wants a few nice local shows. That's all she really wants, you know, on any given year. She's helping take care of her older parents and her adult autistic son. Like most of us, she's got a complicated life, and she's aware of how much time she has to commit. She's also helps run a very prominent textile studio here in town.
Cool.
Yeah, no, it's really cool. But because of the way her life is structured, she doesn't have oceans of time to work on her work. And it doesn't take oceans of time. It just takes persistence. And if you have 5 minutes, you use 5 minutes. And it's harder in that setup when you really don't have a lot of time, but just little bits. It's a little harder to see your trajectory. And so it's nice to have another set of eyes come in and go, oh, yeah, those three right there will develop into a large body of work. These two you're showing down here don't relate to those, but they relate to one another, and they can develop into.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. And those are things that are hard to see when your time is really fractured.
And I like that. It's almost like having like someone accountable to you, because it's hard to stay motivated.
Yeah.
When you have those little bits of time, because I mean, I could sit here and go, oh, I'll just finish my coffee and then I'll get to it. And
yeah, me too.
But, you know, if I know like, okay, Stephanie's going to be looking at my stuff tomorrow, it would give me more motivation, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is that another key thing? Do you think about staying productive? It is.
Yeah. And for the other person I'm mentoring, she's a much younger artist, and she still thinks it's going to take oceans of time to do anything. And she's about to have her first baby. And it's like, I know what that's like. So
nap times are a great place to get stuff done. That's all I'm saying.
The only time you can is nap time. Initially, you have to sleep with the kid because you're exhausted. Mm-hmm. But as things open up, yes, nap time is your time.
Mm-hmm.
And don't use it to go grocery shopping and leave a babysitter with the kid. Use it in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
You know, use it in the studio. But I'm in a situation again, both with the injury that I incurred last year that was almost taken care of when I fell. I can only do things in little bits and pieces. And during the last year, I could work in the textiles because there's a lot of standing involved with that. And I'm not allowed to put any weight on my foot yet here. And so I've gone back actually to drawing, which I always do. And it's part of how I deal with life's ickiness. You know, those are drawings that don't necessarily get shown. They're just, you know, diaristic drawings where you're like, I know, it all stinks. I'm going to just draw that it all sticks today. You know, yeah. Although I drew a pain map and I took it to my surgeon.
Oh, that's a great map. That's a good idea.
Oh,
yeah. So when I finally met with the surgeon, you know, the first thing they always ask the white haired lady is, so you're retired, right? And I'm going, No. I had one of them ask me if I was in an assisted living. I'm going, no, no. I'm an exhibiting artist who exhibits all across the U.S. and in a little bit in Europe. I think, oh, okay. And I'm an art dealer. Oh, okay. Yeah. So, you know, you got to really put down on the table and nail it down, exaggerate it a little so they'll pay attention to you. But, you know, and so I showed this to him. He said, oh, yeah, I heard you were an artist. I said, yeah, you know, that's the shin splint. That's where it feels like nails going into me. And this is just the aches. And he's going, oh, my God, you know. So, but it was useful, actually.
And I think Julie has gone through something like that. Julie, I'm going to, like, tell on you. She's like, loves to draw, but she had some pain in her wrist.
Oh, yeah.
So she had to, like, sort of redo. Tell us, Julie.
Yeah.
No, so for years I've had pain in my wrist and my elbow, and yeah. I had injured my elbow at work years ago. And just, you know, I was in school for architecture, interior architecture. And so back then it was all drawing by hand, and it's very precise drawing. So you're putting a lot of tension and grip into your pencil for years, and that runs all the way down into your elbow.
Oh yeah. Well,
but this last year it got to the point where I couldn't even write with a pen for, you know, 2 to 5 minutes without pain. So I finally gave in last year and went and had surgery, but it was one of those things I didn't really want to tell anyone. I didn't know what was going to happen. And the thought of losing the ability to draw and write, and I mean, I couldn't even use a mouse without pain. So the thought of losing that right hand just really.
It's terrifying.
Terrifying. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, it's nice to be able to write and draw and not have any pain.
Yeah, no, I had to fix my right wrist. And and it's, yeah, absolutely essential. But while it was all bandaged up, I figured out how to draw some things with my left hand.
Yeah, I did a little the first couple of weeks with my left hand, but I just like my right hand better.
Oh, I do too.
And it wasn't carpal tunnel. Let me just tell people that there's more out there with your wrists than just carpal tunnel.
Yeah, for me, it was carpal tunnel. But yeah, you probably had it just all the way up. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Everything was unhappy with you.
Yep. So now it's all happy.
Yeah. Yay. Isn't that great? Yeah. Yes. So now.
A light at the end of the tunnel, you know?
There is. And there are ways to work in the interim. What I'm at 5 weeks out from this surgery. And, you know, the first few weeks, if you're lucky, if you do a drawing a day and then you go to sleep, you know,
right.
You know, you take the drugs and you go to sleep. And I'm not taking much in the way of drugs now, just at night. But there's still a lot of fuzzy brain. And so I time things, you know, you begin to learn your body through these things that life throws at you, including babies, you know, because you get fuzzy brained with that too. And so I know what time of day I can handle the emails. And then, you know, and then I have to go do something else. I might be able to read. I'm reading some art history now, and that's usually early afternoon. And then by late afternoon, I'm sound asleep for about an hour. But, you know, you begin to learn the new rhythm as it changes. But I still prioritize doing a little bit of work every day because it's what makes me whole. And so I'm working on some accordion books because that suits the size of what I can do. And they take me a couple days. You know, they're a combination of collage and drawing. and a little bit of paint, and they soothe my little shredded soul.
Yeah.
Well, I think what I hear is to stay productive during these downtimes is, one, the first thing that you did, Susan, is that you almost reinvented yourself.
Yep.
And then you had that mindset of, you know what? This brings me joy.
Yep.
Regardless of if it's going to get shown or not, I'm going to do a little something. Like, I'm trying to, like, just do a little something a day.
Yep.
And then maybe bring someone along with you.
Yeah.
Someone who you trust.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah. You don't want heavy downers. Yeah.
No. And to help, you know, not guide you and maybe mentor you, like find a mentor, but find someone who will like come alongside you as like, okay, this is good, this is not good, you know, like have weekly meetings, keep yourself and your art as a priority. Is that?
Yeah, that's the main thing, is the priority. And you just, I've even had pastors that I know write to me going, how are you so productive? And I said, how are you? Because they all complain about writing their sermons, right?
Yeah.
Right. And I said, it's the same thing you do. You show up, you make a mark, and then you make another mark. You know, you just plod along. And the other part is that, you know, I mean, there's so many things. I mean, perfection, it's a lovely dream. It ain't real. Let it go. Let it go. We are not making masterpieces here. We might accidentally once in a while make something that's a masterpiece, but it's not a masterpiece. We're just making stuff. We're using stuff to make stuff. Some of it will find a home. Some of it just goes in a drawer because it was good for us.
Yeah.
And also, you know, while it's important, frankly, to humanity that we keep doing this and sharing this, because humans have always done this and always shared in one way or another, it ain't rocket science.
Nope.
Nobody's going to die. You know, it's not surgery. So
I love that, though. I think that's a key point, Susan, is not, don't strive for perfection.
No.
Strive for what you
creation.
Want.
Yeah.
Just keep going. Creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just keep going. And you will make a tremendous amount of trash. We all do. That's normal.
I love that, Susan.
I know. I'm like getting so many quotables from this right now.
I know. I'm like, okay. We're still like, captioning so I can capture it. But
just
one moment.
So because funny.
I think one really important theme that's come through everything that you've talked about so far that just needs to kind of be pulled out as a nugget for people to go, is every time something has happened, you found a new way to create.
Yep.
And, you know, and I'm looking back on myself, and that's the same thing I did with my wrist.
Right.
I started creating on the iPad.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that's so important to not identify yourself with just one single medium.
I agree.
Because there's hundreds out there. And if it throws you, you know, you have to go down a different path and it doesn't support the medium you're on right now.
Right.
Investigate something else and have fun with it. Because like you said, it's not about perfection. It's about creation.
It is. I mean, interestingly, I mean, I just happen to have this skeleton. So 30 years ago, I had to have part of my back fused. And it was a terrible, you know, surgery 30 years ago that took the better part of a year to recover. So that was in my clay days. So obviously, I wasn't working in clay. You know, I was in a body cast. I was not working in clay. And but once I was relieved of most of the drugs, I wrote. That's where my creativity went.
Wow.
I wrote. And actually the other day I wrote a poem. It was wonderful. A friend sent me a link to this society I'm not going to join because it's $100 to join, but it's a society that studies archetypes. And they have this poetry thing, and they send out an image of art, you know, like a statue or something. And this was a prehistoric sort of femaleish image, but without the breasts, but it was more like the arms that will hug kind of stuff. But it was also really, really fierce looking too, without any, you know, features. It was fierce. And I suddenly realized, you know, I wrote about it and it was like, oh, it's like a mother's love. There could be danger here in those arms because these arms were like this. But my heart, you know, sucks in, you know, your heartbeat, my soul sucks it in. And then I realized she's standing really firmly because no one's going to get her baby. It's a mother's love. And it was like, that's the first poem I've written in like 10 years, you know? Awesome. So when one door closes for a while, take a peek at the other ones. Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, like with you, Jules, it'll help you heal.
Yep. Oh, it did.
Yeah. It did. Yeah.
Definitely. And it allows you to still create and be fulfilled.
Yeah.
And hey, maybe it turns into something else. You know, you just never know what else it could turn into.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important, no matter what stage in life you are. That is, I mean, everything you're saying, that's the message I'm hearing.
Yeah. Everything has changed. No question. Yeah. Everything is.
I'm going to kind of flip that back around because I'm curious about your take on this. So with the idea of being open to reinvent your approach that feeds you, that's kind of the note that I took down. Yeah. Be open to reinvent your approach that feeds you. One of the things that the marketing people and the gallery people and all the, you know, the powers that be are telling artists to do is to niche down, find their voice. So yeah. What would you say to something like that?
Voice can travel through media.
Good.
Voice can travel through media. It is harder if your media shift a lot. And mine have over the years. I have mad skills because of being a sculptor. You know, I know how to deal with materials. And it can be a problem. But by looking at all of your output and seeing where the relationships are, you can still develop bodies of work. There are things that I did back in the clay days, none of which exist anymore, but that easily could be shown with some of the work that I do now, because some of the visual approach and some of the compositional approaches are identical. They're just in different media.
Oh, wow.
And cool. So this emphasis on media is actually, I think, fairly recent. I mean, it happened during the Renaissance with the guilds and things. And, you know, you can have competing bodies of work. You just show them different places. Like, I think when we were talking, you know, prior to this actual recording, I talked about how artists might show paintings with one gallery who's representing them, and then they'll have an agreement with another gallery to show something entirely different. It might be their prints, that might be their drawings. It might be something that doesn't relate at all to what the first gallery has. So, you know, you want to be identifiable. And when you're sending out packets, it's probably a good idea to send things that look like a show. I mean, you don't want to have a little of this, a little of that, a little of this. Yeah, you want it to look like a show on the screen when they look at it. You want it to make sense. But, you know, as artists, we just got to make what we got to make.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting to me to, I went to a show of Chuck Close when I was in New York, probably for the first time in 35 years. And I had always, in a way, poo-pooed Chuck Close for just doing these big, large faces. I mean, they're beautiful. I mean, they're great. But what I realized after going to this show of his prints and his handmade paper, and this was before I understood that he was face blind. He can't actually recognize, couldn't actually recognize people.
No,
really?
I had no idea. But I went to this show. I don't remember who put it on, but it was of his prints and his handmade paper. And he was a process artist. For him, it was all about setting up a cool thing. How many colors can I use doing this? Can I make it with 32 colors? You know, and he would do the grid of somebody's face, and he would use as many colors as possible and still have it work. Or he set up problems for himself. Now, it all showed together well because it was all faces, but it was not all the same media at all.
Wow. That's so interesting.
Not even remotely. And at that point, I understood Chuck Close.
That's really neat.
Yeah. And so allow yourself to experiment. Just don't try to show all of it together at once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, you can do I send my experimental work actually to group shows to try them out. That's where my experimental stuff goes. Wow. You know, it's to the group shows. Are they in my solo shows? Only if it suddenly became a body of work, you know, because I'm fooling around all the time trying new things. And when it's something that's worthwhile, eventually there's enough of it to make a show.
Yeah.
But you still got to fool around. If you're going to grow, you got to mess around. And if what you love beyond everything in the world is watercolors, do that messing around in watercolors. I mean, I don't care. But as artists, that's what we do. You know, we got to mess around. But
I love that.
Yeah. You know, and not all of it gets shown, but maybe you'll have over time several bodies of work.
So I'm kind of pulling something else out of this. It's kind of Julie's nugget here too, to add to Julie's nugget. These little things that happen that butt up in your life, they're disruptions from what you're used to doing to create something new and move through it and find that evolution into the next thing.
Yeah, you do. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and you have to be a little careful about it. You know, I would still sign up for classes in materials I was interested in up to about 15 years ago. And that was always a little bit of a danger for me because all of a sudden it would become my new medium. But, and I, we're done.
Guilty.
Yeah. No, yeah, we've never done that.
Ever.
No.
No, but I think I lost my thread there a little bit. Oh, the other thing was moving your studio can actually change how you work too.
Oh, that's an idea.
Yeah. I moved to Minneapolis from East Lansing, Michigan. And I moved to, as a book artist, I was working and known nationally as a book artist at that point. And I moved to a major book art center. And almost immediately I stopped making books as the primary thing. Go figure.
Huh.
It's really odd. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, you know, you change your studio, you tend to change your artwork too. So you just kind of think about that, you know, because we're all affected by our surroundings. Mm-hmm. And I moved to a whole new town and I opened it as a gallery so I would meet people. And I had been doing gallery work and I wasn't really done. And I was affected by being in a larger town. It's like a mini New York City. It's got all the art and culture of New York City and the restaurants and all of that, but on a much smaller scale. And where I came from was much more like a small industrial town, even mm-hmm. though it was an educational town. And so it was just, you know, thrilling, but it really changed how I worked. And I started doing more installations when I was here.
That's really interesting.
And then
a little bit over, but before we go, tell everybody where to go to find your work, to look at your work, to be a fan.
Yeah.
Where do we go?
The first place to go is my website, and that is SusanHenselProjects.com. And feel free to sign on for the newsletter there, which doesn't come frequently. It just comes when I get around to it, when I have something to say.
Yeah.
Also, read my blog, because the blog on that website has a lot of professional stuff in it, of, you know, what it takes to be a professional artist, or the things you didn't know about how the big boys work, that it's shocking, and stuff like that. I also have a gallery website, SusanHenselGallery.com. And then go to my Instagram, and that's it's with underscores between the words, Susan_Hensel_multimedia, one word, _artist. And there you'll see the work in process, you know, as it goes along. I'll often put up work saying, this is stage one, I think. Maybe.
Or I might love that.
Yeah. And here's what's on my studio table. What's on yours?
I love
that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I announce shows there too. So, and I just had a big show come down from Duluth. The next, and that show will move on to the Springfield Art Association in Springfield, Illinois, in, I think it's July.
So, and if you're in Illinois, please go see it.
Yeah.
On the left, I actually have a friend who lives there, Susan, and I might go up and see her. We'll go to your.
Yeah. Well, when I have the dates firm, I'll let you know.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, the director of the Springfield Art Association is an artist I've shown several times.
Oh, awesome!
She moved back to Illinois to take care of family, and she's going to drive down and pick this stuff up. I don't even have to ship it.
That's nice.
Yes.
Well, you guys can see why we have fallen in love with Susan.
There's such a wealth of information on here right now.
And I know we're going to have you back, Susan, because
thank you.
We kind of love you, and we're going to we're your fangirls now. And
we should just get together for drinks sometime, and that'll be
yes. We would love that. But anyway, you guys go follow Susan. Go follow everything that you can with her. She's a wealth of knowledge, so lovely, so gracious, and we thank you again for being on our show.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you very much. That's been my pleasure.
Thanks for listening to Artists Soar,
a podcast for artists by artists. And if you have any questions, feel free to email us at hello@artistsoar.com.
And be sure to leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts so that you can get more of us, and we can bring in some sponsors to help you and help us.